Senate will come to order. Roll call by the chief clerk.
Roll call for Friday, February 26th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Elliott.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey, Meyer, Meyer-S, Nicholas, Nicholas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
not here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Sessions,
here.
Townsend,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Hines,
here.
30 present.
Prayer by Pastor Nelson.
One of the reasons I like living in Wyoming is there is no state income tax due in no small part to the abundance of natural energy we've got here. And when I watch the news, I see the price at the wellhead go up, and I kind of like that because that means more revenue for the Wyoming coffers, and I benefit from that, and so I appreciate that. Then one day it hit me when the price at the wellhead goes up, the price at the pump goes up too, and I don't like that quite as well because I'm the one who has to pay that. But what that says is economics and politics and life is just kind of complicated. And your senators, you're involved in the legal process, and you know how that works. It starts out with the best of intentions to benefit of a lot of people, and it just doesn't always come out the way you hope it does, and some people don't appreciate what happens. And so I think we, as a general public, don't realize all that you do in the background that we don't see. And so this morning, I want to say thank you for what you do. I certainly don't agree with all the decisions you make, but nevertheless, thank you for what you do, because you step up in what's a complicated arena, and you act as leaders, and you try and make Wyoming a great state to live in, and I appreciate that for me and my family. So thank you for what you do. Let's pray. Lord God, these men and women gather today to do the business of government, and you have ordained government for the best interests of the people, and so that can be a hard task. And I pray for them today, the decisions they make affect this state and beyond, and not everybody is always happy with that decision. And so, Lord, I pray that you would give them wisdom to make decisions that would strengthen and prosper our state and our nation, and I pray that they would be motivated by a desire to be a blessing to others, and that they would be patient with the rest of us when we fail to appreciate the challenges of their job. In Christ's name, amen.
Amen. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports at the Journal of February the 25th, 2010, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, last week we had the career and technical teachers from around the state. Today, we have the students up in the gallery today. We have the students, the Skills USA State Officer Team from Cheyenne, Casper, Douglas, and Laramie. They'd stand up. I'd like you to welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate, and thank you for visiting us today.
Doctor of the day is Diane Noten, M.D. from Cheyenne. Nurses for the day is Betsy Hartman from Cheyenne and Donna Hayes from Riverton. Thank you. Thought for the day. Opportunity is missed by most people because it come dressed in overalls and looked like work. Messages from the House.
February the 25th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message number 195, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1, the bill is not engrossed and the adopted House members' amendments are being transmitted with the bill. House Bill Number 1, General Government Appropriations, ayes 58, noes 3, excused 4. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2010. Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 1, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 122, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 114, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, and Johnson. No, Senator Jennings, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 132, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, and Scott. No, Senator Schiffer, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 11, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, and Schiffer. No, Senator Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. Did I read that right?
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, House Bill 11, Cancer Control Act Amendment, which was just read in, has an appropriation, and I ask it be re-referred to committee number 2.
House Bill 11 will be re-referred to committee number 2 without objections.
February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 125, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cole, Jennings, Massey, Sessions, Von Flader, and Senator Co-Chairman. February the 25th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 4, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 25th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 111, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 25th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 115, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 25th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 61, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, noes, Senator C. Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 39, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, Jennings, Session, Von Flatren. No, Senator Massey, Senator Coe, Chairman.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 1, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 1, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, General Government Appropriations, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1 and ending June 30th, 2012.
Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1E1, House Bill 1 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Yes, Mr. President, we do have a consent list. It's considerable today. Third reading consent list, House Bill 5, Insurance Risk-Based Capital Revisions. House Bill 6, County Officials, Administrative and Fiscal Duties. House Bill 22, Streamline Sales Use Tax Amendments. House Bill 24, Insurance Requirements for Newly Purchased Vehicles. House Bill 25, Child Care Development Fund. House Bill 26, Medical Review Panel. House Bill 32, Board of Nursing Continuing Jurisdiction. House Bill 41, School Finance Distance Education. House Bill 46, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. House Bill 49, Manufacturing Sales and Use Tax Exemption. House Bill 56, Bonded Indebtedness Mill Levy Supplement. House Bill 66, Governmental Claims Act Process. House Bill 86, Medicaid Elderly Care. House Bill 101, Electricity Generated from Wind Taxation. House Bill 109, Compulsory School Attendance 3. House Bill 110, Higher Education Endowment Challenge Programs. House Bill 124, Lien Statement Notice, and finally, Mr. President, House Joint Resolution 8, Opposition to Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act.
Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 5, House Bill 6, House Bill 22, House Bill 24, House Bill 25, House Bill 26, House Bill 32, House Bill 41, House Bill 46, House Bill 49, House Bill 56, House Bill 66, House Bill 86, House Bill 101, House Bill 109, House Bill 110, House Bill 124, and House Joint Resolution 8. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geist.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Meyer-S.
Aye.
Nicholas. Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. House Bill 5, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 5, 30 ayes. House Bill 6, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 6, 30 ayes. House Bill 22, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 22, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 24, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 24, 30 ayes. House Bill 25, are there any changes? Massey, aye to no. Sessions, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Meyer S, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 25. 26 ayes, 4 noes. House Bill 26, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 26, 30 ayes. House Bill 32, are there any changes? Closing vote. Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Burns, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 32, 27 ayes, 3 noes. House Bill 41, are there any changes? Jennings, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Burns, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Townsend, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. We are on House Bill 41. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 41, 21 ayes, 9 noes. House Bill 46, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 46, 30 ayes. House Bill 49, are there any changes? Von Flateren, aye to no. Massey, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 49, 25 ayes, 5 noes. House Bill 56, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 56, 30 ayes. House Bill 66, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 66, 30 ayes. House Bill 86, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 86, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 101, are there any changes? Jennings, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 101, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 109, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Burns, aye to no.
Hines, aye to no.
President Hines, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 109, 25 ayes, 5 noes. House Bill 110, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 110, 30 ayes. House Bill 124, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 124, 30 ayes. House Joint Resolution 8, are there any changes? Larson, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Sessions, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Massey, aye to no.
Anderson, aye to no.
Scott, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Joint Resolution 8, 23 ayes, 7 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 5, House Bill 6, House Bill 22, House Bill 24, House Bill 25, House Bill 26, House Bill 32, House Bill 41, House Bill 46, House Bill 49, House Bill 56, House Bill 66, House Bill 86, House Bill 101, House Bill 109, House Bill 110, House Bill 124, and House Joint Resolution 8 has passed the Senate. House Bill 27, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 27, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Armed Forces License Plate Fees and Distribution, and act relating to special license plates, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
House Bill 27, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 27. Mr. President, this bill, House Bill 27, is for the second time that I'm aware of in the legislature, takes money for license plates and actually sends it to another entity. The last time that this was done was with the University Alumni Association. This sent it to the Veterans Commission. The difference between the two is the fact that the Alumni Association is not a governmental entity. The Veterans Commission is, and it is subject to appropriations from this body. So all this amendment simply says is that they will report back to the department. To the Joint Appropriations Committee and the Joint Transportation Committee about the actions taken and the monies expended. And I think frankly, especially the JAC needs to know this information in their contemplations for the appropriations for the ongoing years.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question being so, third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 27 pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chairs in doubt, all in favor of the amendment, please stand. Those opposed? The amendment has passed. Further discussion on the bill? House Bill 23 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll. House Bill 27. Chief Clerk, recall the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt. Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Meyer S. Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Bonflaturn. President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 noes.
House Bill 27, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 27 have passed the Senate. House Bill 84. Majority floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in the balcony above, we have the members of the Camp Guernsey Youth Challenge Program. If they would stand, those of you who were at the Governor's Prayer Breakfast this morning saw an example of some of the fine work they can do with the color guard, the posting of the colors. And I would just simply say before we welcome them that those of us down here would say to you, some of the best things in life are quite difficult, but those things are, well, as we say, the best things in life. So we urge you to continue to stay the course and finish your program. So with that, members of the Senate, would you please welcome the Youth Challenge Group.
Welcome to the Senate. We're glad to have you here today. Senator Dockstetter. Oh, in a hurry here. Okay, House Bill 84, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 84, sponsored by Representative Bilkrey. Gold Star license plates, an act relating to motor vehicles. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 84, third reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 6.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 84. Members of the Senate, what this does is, again, allows for a report to joint appropriations, joint transportation, on the activities of this measure by October 1st, their actions taken, the monies expended. Again, it's just a report back to know how the program is going. And then Section 2, we would, based on the passage of HB 27, we'd take $3,000 from the Veterans Commission Expendable Trust Fund and use it to cover the cost of these Gold Star plates, thus alleviating that expense for the families who are going through this difficult situation and helping them to acquire those Gold Star plates. I would ask for your favorable approval of the amendment and the bill. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. All in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 84, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. Are you ready for the question? House Bill 84 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk, will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Meyer
S. Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing.
Case no to aye.
Case no to aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
House Bill 84, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 84 has passed the Senate.
President.
Senator Johnson.
May I have the privilege of the floor, Mr.
President? You may.
Senator Sessions, whose one grandson is just back from Iraq, and whose other grandson, who is of military age, is in the Navy and will be going to Navy SEAL training. And I know that she will hang this in her window. And I have another one here, Mr. President. I don't know, do any of you have a grandchild or a child that is in the active military? In case you don't, then we do have a staff member in the active military, and I'm talking about our assistant chief clerk, who is a master sergeant in the Wyoming Air National Guard, and is also first sergeant, first shirt for the 153rd Airlift Wing, and I would like the Senate to present this to her for her window.
Thank you very much, Senator Johnson, and to the members that received flags in this body, we're proud of your families. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Since Senator Dockstader chickened out of this part that he agreed on, I hope none of you ever see one of these in your window, in a window in a house in our state. But unfortunately, the chances are pretty good. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are that order of business considerations of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I guess it's a sprint to the finish, but with that, I would move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senator Von Flateren.
The Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for consideration is House Bill 102. Clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 102, sponsored by Representative R. Anderson, Livestock and Brands, and Act Relating to Livestock. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, the Committee of the Whole, I move House Bill 102 do pass. And I'd also like to move the Standing Committee Amendment.
Would the clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 102, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, I would also move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Johnson to explain the bill and the First Amendment.
Senator Johnson. Excuse me a second, Mr. Senator Johnson. I try it. Try it now. No, it's losing it. And I'm having issues here. Okay, sir. Senator Johnson, you're good to go here.
Is that a promise, Mr. Chairman?
I can't say how the vote will go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 2006, the legislature did an extensive revision of the predator board law statutes and the predator statutes. In those, for the first time, we included goats, llamas, and alpacas. And in the time since then, it's been a bit of a disaster, Mr. Chairman. And at the request of just about everybody, the good senator from the good representative and I brought House Bill 102. Originally, if you look on page 2, there was a change on the predator management fees for the goats, alpacas, and llamas. And that was a bit cumbersome, so I would like to now talk about Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to this bill. What that does is bring the predator laws back to the way they were prior to the changes in 2006. The problem, one, is that the sheep and the cattle are taxed, I guess, when they're shipped, when the brand inspector goes out there. Goats, llamas, and alpacas essentially aren't shipped.
There aren't that many. There's not herds of them. They don't go to slaughterhouses. They don't go to other ranches. So there wasn't really that much money coming in. And number two, it was just unwieldy. It was too cumbersome. So what we did with the Committee of the Whole, Standing Committee Amendment number one, is just take it back to how it was before 2006. This was at the request of everybody. And if the owners of the goats, llamas, and alpacas are having a problem with predators, and this is usually coyotes, they can go to their local predator board, contract with them to go get rid of them, and it still can be done. So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask first that you vote in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number one, and I know there's a Committee of the Whole Amendment coming up after that.
Okay. Further discussion on Standing Committee number one? Seeing none, all in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt the Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, this House Bill 102, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt the Standing Committee, Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're on. There is another amendment at this time, Committee of the Whole number one amendment. Senator Geis.
Read that in, please.
Reading clerk.
House Bill 102, Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, page one, line nine.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment number one in House Bill 102. And what happened is we didn't go quite far enough down in the statutes. So down on line 44, you go down, why we need to take goats out of there. On page line 4 and 5 is another place that we need to take the goats out. Down on line 32, we forgot that section in 11.6.203. To take goats out of that section, and that's all we're doing is just removing the goats from those other two sections.
Any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to accept the Committee of the Whole number one, the House Bill 102, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment number one has passed. We're back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 102, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 102 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our reading is House Joint Resolution 2. Would the reading clerk please read it in?
House Joint Resolution 2, sponsored by Representative Illaway, Resolution Assertion of State Rights, a joint resolution demanding Congress cease and desist from enacting mandates that are beyond the scope of the enumerated powers granted to Congress by the Constitution of the United States. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, States, and Public Lands, and Water Resource reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill, Senator Geis.
Two, and I'd also move the Standing Committee amendments, if it'd be read in.
Would you please read it in?
House Joint Resolution 2, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 4, line 5.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, I'll yield the floor to Senator Bebout to explain the amendment and the bill.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the Senate. The first thing I'd like to dispense with is the Standing Committee Amendment, and if you look at page 4, line 5, it's a good catch by your Agriculture Committee. The House wanted to say that the Wyoming legislature claims sovereignty. And sometimes we appreciate that. We'd like to do that, but the intent was the state of Wyoming claims sovereignty.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's what the Standard Committee Amendment does. I would call for the question on that amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the committee whole rise, or excuse me, in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment 1 has passed. We're on the bill, or would you like the committee the whole amendment?
Mr. Chairman, let's talk about the bill and for a second, if we could. And Mr. Chairman, this is another joint resolution, and there's been a lot of activity in this country, in this state, about states' rights, certainly the 10th Amendment and the rights guaranteed in that under our Constitution. And I don't have to read to the members of this body all the whereases and what they mean and the meaning of them. A couple things I would like to point out, Mr. Chairman, is if you look at page 4 under Section 2, we talk about co-states, and that's an amendment that was added in the House. I think has it's very applicable in this to try to get other states together to believe and agree with us on the importance of the 10th Amendment. And the rest of it, of course, deals with the federal government's position, that things they do and to our state and to other states, of course, that we think violate the 10th Amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Further discussion on the bill? There is a committee of the whole amendment. Senator Elliott, would you like that read in at this time?
Am I on? Yes, Mr. Chairman, if you would have that read
in. Please read in committee of the whole number 1.
House Joint Resolution 2, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 5, line 5.
Senator Elliott.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, in much the same fashion.
Senator Elliott, would you please move
the amendment? I do move the amendment, Mr. Thank Chairman. Thank you. Members of the Senate, in much the same fashion as was pointed out by the Senator, in support of the resolution itself, Section 4 had language in it that did not seem to be appropriate. We discussed it with the sponsor. He agreed. And so the amendment is on page 5. At the end of Section 4, we take out the language, is prohibited or repealed, and insert the amendment language, which simply says that it's void as beyond the scope of constitutionally delegated powers. That's the thrust of the amendment. It is correct in our view in terms of what the resolution is trying to say. I would move the amendment.
Further discussion on the committee of the whole number 1 amendment? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I just have read this quickly, but as I see that you're trying to say that if you've got legislation direct states to comply or require states to pass legislation or lose federal funding. And, Mr. Chairman, we've got lots of federal legislation that we comply with that requires us to comply or we lose federal funding. Are we really going to try to say that the highway program is void, is beyond the scope and powers, constitutional powers of the federal government, or the Medicaid program, or the child health program? It seems to me that's what we're saying with this amendment, and I wonder if that isn't what we're saying with the joint resolution. Now, I realize it's a joint resolution, and I think the Congress is well-equipped with the kind of devices that Senator Cooper and I share here behind our chairs, nice and square, and that's where those things go. But I really wonder if we want to go quite this far. So I have some reservations about this particular amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what it really says is that we don't want them to put the sanctions and penalties on this anymore. So it's balanced, and maybe it is time to go there.
Further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment 1. Senator Elliott.
In terms of your own thought, but our thought was with the sponsor that Even though one may question the effectiveness of the joint resolutions, at least the language should be what the proponents intended, and that's the purpose of the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Elliott's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Further comment on the bill? Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In thinking about how I'm going to vote on this resolution, it helped me, at least me personally, to know a little bit about how we got to our Constitution and got to Amendment 10. It was based upon the fact that we had tried another form of government after the Revolution, essentially a government of state compacts that was not working. It created a great deal of chaos. And some places anarchy and open revolt in the United States at that time. So folks got back together and said we have to come up with something that provides us with a stronger federal government that nevertheless recognizes the rights of state governments and the people. And that's the Constitution that we have today. After the designers of the Constitution completed the work, they were concerned that it wouldn't be ratified by the states and would be rejected. And in particular, they were concerned that it would appear that the federal government was too strong, especially compared, especially in relationship to the English government that had just been thrown off, had just been kicked out of the country. And they wanted to assure everybody of the individual rights that had formed the foundation of the country and the reasons for fighting the Revolutionary War to start with. And in reality, Mr. Chairman, that's what we see in what's called the Bill of Rights or the first articles to our Constitution, that each of the states were asked to ratify, and of course they eventually did, and that's why we have the Constitution. And that's based upon the notion of the natural goodness of the individual, that in order for people to be truly free, we had to rely upon the rights that God had given to individuals and their God-given freedom and the fact that they were created equal. And that's what this country was based upon, and that's what we fought the Revolutionary War, and when we created the government after that, we became the first government on earth in which the power to govern lied with the people and not with the government itself. And so when we look at those amendments, that's a reiteration of that. Okay? If you look at the first or the amendments that come before the 10th Amendment, it's a freedom of religion, speech, and press, freedom of the individual to bear arms, to be free of unreasonable search and seizure, to have right to speedy and public trial by juries, and not to have their life, liberty, and property denied without due process. And when we get to the 10th Amendment, Mr. Chairman, the authors of this amendment had that in mind. It says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. It was a reiteration that while they were defining the rights reserved to the states, that ultimately it's the rights of the people that form the foundation of our government. Yet what we have in the resolution here in front of us, when we look at that key statement, we get through all the whereases, and we finally get to Section 1, it says that the Wyoming legislature claims sovereignty under the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which is what's granted, over all powers not otherwise enumerated and granted to the federal government. What this says is that we're also have sovereignty and taken the powers reserved to the people, because it doesn't say that in that section. The 10th Amendment talks about the rights and the powers reserved to the people.
This resolution says all rights not reserved for the federal government are reserved for the states. It leaves the people out. It wasn't the federal government or state government or the colonial government that fired the shot heard around the world. It was the people. And I'm not going to support any resolution that doesn't recognize the power to the people.
Thank you, Senator Massey. Senator Peabout?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to get involved in a debate on interpretation of what the Founding Fathers had or didn't do. But what I will tell you, and at least in my limited knowledge of the Constitution and the Federalist paper that I've read and how I feel very, 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 very sincere about this the Constitution, our Tenth Amendment, is clearly if you read it, you look at the formation of a republic and the whole basis of it. You know, it's we the people. Let's don't forget that, the Declaration of Independence. And where that is and what that means. And if you really understand, in my opinion, what the Constitution says and how it relates to the Tenth Amendment and the sovereignty issue and what's designated to the powers of the state, I don't think it in any way, shape, or form takes away from the power of the people. If my colleague from Albany County really feels that way and come an amendment that would justify that and show that, I certainly would not oppose that. All we're trying to do is take what we think is the interpretation of the Tenth Amendment relative to the powers of the state. If you go further than that and look at the entire concept of we the people and what we talked about, I don't think this takes away from that.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, every now and then one of these comes along that if you actually read the thing, it makes us look ridiculous. And this one is of that nature. Look at that section 4 on page 5. You were against anything that requires the states to pass legislation or lose federal funding. Mr. Chairman, every federal grant and aid program that we take advantage of is of that nature. You have to pass some legislation, and they will specify some of the contents of it. If you want to take the federal share, it's highway funds, it's Medicaid, it's the child health insurance program, just to name the three biggest ones. Are we really prepared to say that we're against all those things? Now, Mr. Chairman, on occasion I've thought that we may well get an issue in the future as to whether or not we ought to turn particularly the Medicaid program down because the federal requirements are getting so onerous we could do it more cheaply. They haven't reached that stage yet, but they may before they're done, current health reform efforts. But really, Mr. Chairman, this one, the only saving grace is that the Congress is going to totally ignore this. It's just wasting our time. But do we really want to do that sort of thing?
Further discussion on Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, speaking against this resolution, and there are several reasons for that, but the main one that I'll focus on is on page 3, line 11. And the first act that it talks about is the Real ID Act. And as most of you are aware, a couple years ago we had a resolution or a bill, I forget what it was at that time, but that one piece of legislation failed to pass this body. And that was a piece of legislation. One of the reasons I was opposed to it was primarily because it said it was voluntary, but then it said if we didn't comply, we would not be able to do a lot of the different things. So, in fact, it wasn't voluntary. And I think if something's going to be voluntary, it should be voluntary, rather than just say that it is and in fact, is not. But anyway, we failed to pass any legislation to voice our disapproval with the Real ID Act, and that was just one piece of legislation. You know, so with all these other pieces of legislation that are outlined in this page, you know, I think is way overreaching. And Mr. Chairman, we have enough trouble fighting with some of the contractors from Colorado and other states. I don't know that we want to fight the federal government. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on joint resolution. Senator Jennings.
I kind of agree, but not really, with my colleague from Jonah County, because look at what federal funds are. Federal funds are money out of your paycheck, out of your businesses, out of our federal royalties. That's money that is mandatory, taken away from us in Wyoming, goes out there to the East Coast gang. They figure out what they want to do to it, our money. They put a bunch of strings on it, and then they dangle it back in front of us. So maybe there are some of those things that we should be looking at and saying, we don't like the strings, we don't like, let us start to do it. I know that's way out there to put that together, but that's what federal funds are. It's money taken out of our state, out of our pockets, out there, put strings on them and send it back.
Further discussion, Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I took a hit in the local media on similar legislation. I know we're not supposed to talk about other pieces of legislation, but I have to agree with the tall senator from the rural part of our county. I think we got to be pretty careful with this. Saving grace, of course, is that this probably won't get read back in the Beltway, but in my local district, we have a college that accepts, as much as $8 million in federal Pell Grant money to help our single parents and our students to go to college. What we're really saying here is that if they ask us to have certain sorts of rules and regulations for our colleges, such as accreditation or whatever, that we're going to turn down that kind of money for students. The good senator pointed out we're talking about highway funds, we're talking about child care money. This goes pretty deeply. This says all compulsory federal legislation that directs us to do anything, we don't want it. The problem with this is that the title of it goes out there, and all the folks back home say, well, how could you vote against saying something to the federal government? Well, I think I join a lot of you in saying that I get pretty discouraged with the overreaching efforts of the federal government, but this particular resolution, if you read it, take the time to understand what we're saying, I'm not sure that we can go there. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Others? Senator Cooper?
Mr. Chairman, I'll tell you, I've heard on this floor and heard many, many times by people in the public over and over again the fact that, we're never doing anything to stop the federal government from riding roughshod over us in the states. And every time we turn around, we are beholden to the federal government for everything that we get. And I hear people saying that over and over again. We're tired of that. We're tired of the feds shoving it down our throat, so to speak, and everything that we get. We send the money out that was mentioned here, and then we have to beg to get it back. Well, this is something we can say to them that we do dislike, and we don't like them doing this. And also, I've heard it said that we never do anything. We never do anything to ask the feds to change that. We never do anything officially to ask them. And this is our opportunity to do that, to say something to them, to get our statement out there to them. And I don't know why there's a problem with that. I mean, if we're tired of it and we don't say anything, then whatever we get, we deserve. And this is a bill, or a resolution rather, to let them know and to inform them just exactly how we feel about this.
Further discussion on joint resolution. Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Joint Resolution Number 2, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Joint Resolution 2 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, division. All those in favor of House Joint Resolution 2, please stand. 18. All those opposed, please stand. House Joint Resolution 2 has still passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 63. Will the clerk please read it?
House Bill 63, sponsored by Representative Millen, Tanning Salon Minors, an act relating to ultraviolet tanning services. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move with the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 63 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
The clerk, please read the amendment.
House Bill 63, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 7.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, all the standing committee amendment does is clean up some sloppy work on the other side of the Capitol. I urge its adoption.
Heard. Question on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Number 1 to 63 has passed. Senator Scott for the bill.
Mr. Chairman, explaining the bill briefly, we've had a large number of establishments in this state now that are these tanning salons. I'm sure you've all driven by them and seen them advertised. And the problem with them is that they are potentially dangerous. If somebody indulges in them to excess, they're running a very real risk of causing them a few years down the road to have cancer, skin cancer, particularly malignant melanoma, which is a risk because it is often a fatal cancer. The testimony we had in committee was that the younger the person getting the tanning, the greater the risk that young people are at more risk because of the stage of the development of their skin. And don't ask us to explain all the medical reasoning behind that, but we had the health department and the medical doctor saying that's the way it was. So what this bill does is it goes in and says that if you've got a minor that is under the age of 15, the parent has to not only consent to the use of the tanning salon, they have to be there and make sure it isn't done wrong. So that's the point of having the parent there. Between 15 and 18, the parent has to consent. It's just trying to put some brakes on the use of these things by, frankly, the teenage children who really aren't mature enough yet to know better. Let the parents make some judgments as to what's to be allowed and what isn't. There is an exception in here for medical treatment. Apparently, there are some skin conditions for which these things can be a useful treatment. Mr. Chairman, there's a $250 fine for an outfit that violates this. The testimony was we really don't expect to have much difficulty getting this enforced. There was support from the industry for it. They don't want to hurt young kids any more than anybody else does. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Ross.
I can't believe I'm getting up on this thing. I guess I'm just wondering, I mean, wouldn't the parents know if their child was using a tanning salon? Wouldn't they see it? I mean, particularly if they overused it. And if they had special glasses or not. I'm just wondering, I mean, isn't this really a parental responsibility in and of itself? Do we need to do this? I don't know.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, you would hope the parents would notice, although you can't, by looking at it, tell was the tan acquired outside naturally, the sun, skiing or something like that, or was it acquired in one of these tanning salons. And there is some risk associated with the tanning salon, and particularly with the overuse that may not be detectable. So I think it is a wise precaution, and certainly teenagers at this age are getting to be more and more independent. And I think putting the regulation in and having the salon do some policing based on the age is appropriate.
Further discussion on this question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 63 appears to have failed. The Committee of the Whole will have a standing vote on this, please. All those in favor of House Bill 63, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. House Bill 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for Senator Coe.
To the floor.
Yeah, I read that. Yes, Senator Coe, you may.
Mr. Chairman, let me introduce to you the Teacher of the Year in Wyoming. This is Christina Mills. Christina Mills teaches secondary language arts at Lingle Fort Laramie High School in Lingle, Wyoming. She received her Bachelor of Science degree in secondary English education with a minor in history from Dakota State University. She is a highly qualified teacher in English, American history, and world history for both middle and high school. She continues to pursue a degree in Master of Science Education, Adolescent Literacy, and Technology. Ms. Mills stated in her application, "My biggest accomplishments in education are simply the success of my students. Over the past 4 years, my sophomores have received proficient or advanced scores on their district writing assessment. Also, all of Lingle Fort Laramie's seniors received a Hathaway scholarship, and they have scored average or above average on their ACT scores. Community involvement means tutoring every morning before school and into the summer for ACT preparation. Weekends during the summer are dedicated to basketball and volleyball camps. She coaches as the assistant for the high school varsity volleyball team and as the head coach for the girls' high school varsity basketball team. Mrs. Mills also mentors new teachers and serves as the reading intervention coach to provide guided reading instruction in various disciplines. Mrs. Mills assesses student work online. She posts comments, offers help outside of school hours, encourages peer editing and group work. Her students work together without being in the same location, therefore eliminating scheduling conflicts. With these activities, she maintains a 21st century classroom where students use English skills that are relevant to their lives. She's accompanied by Catherine Lynn from the Department of Education, the 2010 Wyoming Teacher of the Year, Christina Mills.
Congratulations, Ms. Mills. Ms. Mills, would you like to say a few words to the Senate? You could use Senator Coe's mic.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to personally thank all of you for everything that you do on a daily basis for us in the educational field. I can't even begin to tell you, it makes my job so much easier with you guys taking care of the big issues and then bringing them on to us. And, you know, we live in a wonderful state. We have wonderful students. I can't say enough about the students I teach. And a lot of it is the state that we live in. And so I just appreciate this opportunity, and I thank you personally for everything you do. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Elliott.
May I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we're on the topic of teachers, good teachers, and students, I'd like to introduce, I believe they're up here in the West Gallery, although I'm short enough I can't see, Tammy Sue Willie and three of her fifth grade class from the Little Snake River Valley in Bags are here to attend our Senate. And they're also planning, Mr. Chairman Geis, to sit in, if it's permissible, at our Ag Committee meeting at noon. So I'd like you to welcome Tammy Sue Willie and three of her students from the fifth grade from Bags.
Welcome to the Senate. And the next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 4. Would the clerk please read it in?
House, February the 25th, 2010. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 4, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Peace. Pete Nicholas, Chairman. Now you want me to read in the bill. House Joint Resolution 4, sponsored by Representative Gingery, mandatory judicial retirement. A joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to remove any mandatory retirement age for Supreme Court justices and judges of other courts in Wyoming.
Heard the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Joint Resolution 4. And for an explanation of the resolution, I yield the floor to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer, S.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had something passed out to you, and at the top it really says HJ4, and I had put Senate File 37 because Senate File 37 is going to be tied to that, so this is a preview. And what this does, it removes the arbitrary age requirement that forces district court judges and Supreme Court justices to retire at the age of 70. It's considered that 70 is an arbitrary age, and that doesn't mean that you automatically become senile. And this is commonly referred to as statutory senility. It seems offensive for the Wyoming Constitution to state at the age of 70 you suddenly lose your mental faculties. This is age discrimination, and it only applies to district court judges and Supreme Court justices, but not to circuit court judges and municipal court judges. So it's not really fair to single out only a certain type of judge. Protections are in place to remove judges that have mental facility issues. The Commission on Judicial Ethics and Conduct was created in the 1990s and is in the Wyoming Constitution. There's 12 members, 3 attorneys, 3 judges, 6 electors. When a complaint comes in, 6 members are named to the investigatory panel and investigate the complaint. Then 6 members are named to an adjudicatory panel and determine recommendation to give to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court can then remove a judge. If it is a Supreme Court justice, then a special panel of 5 district court judges make the decision. HJ 4 places this on the ballot in November of 2010, and if it passes, then the Senate would also be the statute would also be changed through HB 37, which will be presented later. So if you have any questions on this, I'll be glad to answer them as best I can. But I think it's up to us to decide, do we think 70 is the age that our judges should retire?
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, when the bill came to the Judiciary Committee, I was the lone no. And it's not that I'm necessarily opposed to this bill, but I felt like I needed an opportunity to at least talk to you about should there be some sort of limit. And maybe that's arbitrary in and of itself also. I do think that an arbitrary age of 70 is unrealistic at this point in time. But I'm wondering, do we want to have a lifetime tenure for our district court judges and our Supreme Court judges? And we need to have that discussion, and that's why I rise here today, is to have that discussion. Should we consider something in, say, 75 or something like that? I think we need to have at least have a discussion of it. I am conflicted with regard to this because I certainly do think that 70 is way too young, particularly as our ages have continued. The age of in which mortality occurs has gone up and gone up, and there are those that are very much capable of serving, and to arbitrarily preclude them is not right. But by the same token, I wonder if there shouldn't be some end limit. And so I rise to raise that issue with you and hopefully have some debate about that.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question about the commission and about the panel. It seems to me that sometimes it's fairly difficult for a group of one's own, you know, to rise up or to even complain. And I guess I can understand where the good senator is coming from, because you're really entrusting that to, you know, to the inside group. And I guess I'd just like to know a little bit more about how that commission works, whether or not it's just the attorneys that have tried cases in that particular court, or how that appointment process might work.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, according to the information I have, there are 12 members. There are 3 attorneys, 3 judges, and 6 electors. And when a complaint comes in, 6 members are named to the investigatory panel and investigate the complaint. Then 6 members are named to an adjudicatory panel and determine recommendation to give to the Supreme Court. Mr. Chairman, just for further information, too, if you'd like to know what other states are doing, we're one of 19 states that has the age of 70 as the mandatory retirement age. There's one state with a couple of states with 72 as being the age, and several states with 75, and Vermont has the age of 90. So that may help you in some of your decisions.
Further discussion. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I share the concerns that my colleague from Laramie County expressed. You know, our electors previously decided that we don't necessarily want to have lifetime appointments. And we're a pretty unique state where you have one judge generally for each county. And when you reach a point to where your judges are not as productive, they're not producing the cases, going through the caseload. If you had a multi-judge district where other judges can pick up the caseload, it's a little bit different. And what we've decided is that, and I'll tell you what, if you think it's easy to remove a judge, believe me, it's not. And we've encountered situations where we've had circuit court judges who really weren't getting the work done. The judges were upset. The lawyers were upset. They were taking their cases to another district, swearing off the judge simply to get their cases done. So we decided that, sure, there may be judges that can do very well beyond the ages of 70. But when you, in order to avoid that risk where you have one judge who's simply staying longer than he should, we just say everybody retires at 70. Now, if you think that because of age and health that we ought to raise that to 72 or 73 or 74, whatever it is. But believe me, if you think that getting rid of a judge is easy, it isn't. And if you're sitting there and your constituents are trying to get their cases heard in a district where the judge simply isn't getting the work output, or and senility is a hard thing to talk about, and it's a hard thing to do. And if you want to go to lifetime appointments, I'll assure you that you're going to find instances where justice just isn't getting delivered at the same rate that you think it, or in the same quality. We have a lot of young people that would like to be judges, and 70 really is not a bad age to force people to leave the bench. And these are judges, lawyers that can go out and have careers. There's other things that they can do. We're not saying they can't be lawyers anymore. We're simply saying for the judiciary, we'd like to have people that are in the productive, most productive times of their careers.
Further discussion, Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe someone can help me out, too, because, you know, when you have a career in the practice of law, there's different paths a person can go. You can be in private practice. You could decide to work like for the Attorney General's office and have a career with the government, or you could have, and some really do, want to be a judge. How many people in Wyoming in practicing law have that opportunity, and that's the career path they want to take, but they really don't have an opportunity because of the fact that we have the positions are full? Are we in some way limiting some bright young lawyers because of if we change this to a lifetime? Maybe someone could comment on that.
Further discussion? Senator Scott?
Let me ask a further question. I know in the federal system, a judge can go on a semi, sort of a semi-retired status, and a status where they can still hear some cases, fill in as needed, and can use their retirement as a way to cut back without entirely quitting being a judge. And so we don't entirely lose their wisdom, but they work at a pace that's more appropriate for their age. Is that possible with our current state system and this constitutional provision?
Further discussion. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a provision for a senior active status within our judiciary. But the judiciary does have a bill or has a fund to help pay on an hourly basis for judges that choose to continue to take over cases where there are conflicts, things like that. But that's a limited budget, and the Supreme Court guards it pretty zealously. And in most instances, most conflicts are taken by other judges coming in from other districts to help out.
Further discussion, Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I may have a conflict on this, not being a judge, but one of the few in here that are well over 70. I think the problem is having it in the Constitution, as I understand. I would like to see us remove it from the Constitution and then come back. I agree. I don't want it open in, because some of us, as we get older, maybe do lose a step or two as it goes on. I don't think it has to be in the Constitution, however. I don't know of any other place that it says you can only serve to be so old. And I'm wondering, and there may be, but I'm wondering if along with that we should say attorneys could only practice until they're 70. The judges, you want to, you know, limit. If we're going to do that, most judges are attorneys. Should we say attorneys can only practice till they're 70? And so I think the problem is it's in the Constitution. If you want to limit it, which I favor, come back, do it by statute, and you can accomplish the same thing. But it shouldn't be in the Constitution.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I'd like to respond to that. I gave that some thought, but here's the problem. The reason why our Constitution at the federal level provides for lifetime judiciary is to make sure that the judiciary is independent from the legislative branch and the executive branch. If you gave the legislative branch the authority to limit retirement, then the legislature could come in tomorrow and say, we really don't like those last decisions from the Supreme Court, and they're all above 50, and we'll go out and create a requirement that everybody retires at 50. We do a house cleaning of all the judges, and they're gone. So, in the end, the legislature should not have the power to determine how long a judge should sit. You either have lifetime appointments, or that by constitution we set the ages, but the legislature should not be involved in determining when judges retire, and I should not have the authority to move the age up or down. It simply leads to mischief, where you have the opportunity to say, this is a very popular judge. This year we're going to allow judges to serve till they're 60 or till they're 80, and then we find a not-so-popular judge, we're going to back it down to 50 or 75 or even 2 years younger. That should not be a legislative prerogative. Now, under this constitutional amendment, I'm not certain whether the language that remains suggests or allows that the legislature can change. As I read the law, but if the notion is that the legislature can set the age of retirement, that's not a power that we should have. It should be in the Constitution. You either have lifetime or an age that's in the Constitution. The legislature has no business having the power to determine what ages judges should have.
Retirement Act.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, one further point with regard to that. I think this is why you have to think very carefully about this constitutional provision, because I believe that if you take it out completely, I think you would run into a problem if the legislature set in a separate statute 75, you'd run into a problem with age discrimination. So if we want some limit, I think it has to be in the Constitution. Otherwise, you run afoul of other issues that that we probably don't have the power to do, because that clearly would not be a qualification under our Constitution to hold office. And when you look back at, for instance, the term limit decision by the Supreme Court with regards to us in the Senate and in the House, the reason that was struck down by the Supreme Court was because that was not a qualification to hold public office in the Constitution.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, and just elaborating on one of the points that the senator from Laramie County, from Albany County, mentioned in terms of trying to remove a judge for maybe not being able to do his work as well as he or she should. And then the point was brought up about attorneys maybe having to be forced to retire at the age of 70. Well, I think the big difference is that if you have an attorney in practice, regardless of age, and you have a problem with the way that attorney is performing their duties, you can certainly go to the Wyoming Bar Association, and certainly people do it on a regular basis. And you read about that periodically, about attorneys being suspended or disbarred. Very seldom do you hear about a judge reaching that point. So I think that maybe is a big difference there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Senator Elliott.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, I have a couple. I really have conflicted feelings about this because, as the senator from the far western corner of our state mentioned, I happen to be one of those who could meet the definition in the statute because I'm over the age of 70. And yet I've known in my lifetime as a practicing attorney many judges, including those on the federal bench on what are called senior retired status, that are certainly not only functional, but they bring extremely great knowledge and experience to the bench. So I don't think it's something that can be easily solved. The difficulty I also have, and the tall senator from Casper probably knows this as well as anyone in this body, we've heard testimony from the Department of Health and other entities within this state on the increasing longevity that we as human beings are experiencing. So if we set an arbitrary age, as the senator from Cheyenne mentioned, we may be accused 5 years from now, 10 years from now, of again being arbitrary and where that age was set. And yet, as the senator from Albany County said, we do need that independent judiciary, and we can't simply let them run free or let the legislature run free in terms of voting out individuals who do their job and render an unpopular decision. So I'm really conflicted over this. I know plenty of people in my lifetime who far surpass the age of 70 and contribute tremendously to the wealth and the knowledge and the practice of law. So I'm up in the air on this one. I don't like the arbitrary age because I do think it runs afoul of at least what I think are the principles that we ought to be living by. But it is difficult, and it should be difficult, to remove a judge for cause, whether it be for senility or some of the other things you've seen and read about in the press over recent years. So I really am conflicted about it. It's going to take me a long time to make a decision on this.
Further discussion. So many conflicted attorneys. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Joint Resolution 4, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is undecided. All those in favor, please stand. All opposed, please stand. House Joint Resolution has failed the Committee of the Whole. We'll have a roll call. Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson. Bebout. Burns. Case. Coe. Cooper. Dockstader. Elliott. Esquivel.
No.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
No.
Honeycutt.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
No.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
No.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Meyer S.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross. Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Townsend.
No.
Bonflatern.
No.
President Hines. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
House Joint Resolution 4, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 57. Would the clerk please read it in? Could you hold off on that, reading that in?
Yep.
Senator Johnson.
May I have privilege
of the floor? Yes, you may.
Chairman, may I have privilege of the visitor's podium?
Yes, you may, Senator Johnson.
Janet.
fellow senators, I would like to introduce you to Shannon Kelly Hicks. Shannon is and her husband are presidents of the Gold Star Parents of Wyoming. It's made up of 23 families. She came down from Casper this morning to be here for the vote on the Gold Star license plates because that's been a project of her organization. And she got here just as the vote was made. And she asked for me to come out and meet her, and I did. And now, you saw the flag earlier, the Gold Star flag, and I just kept it. But at this time, I would like our Senate President, who himself, let me say that her son, the PFC, Corey Hicks, died on May 2nd, 2008 in Baghdad. Our president, President Hines himself, is an Army veteran, and I would like President Hines to present that Gold Star flag to Shannon.
While it is a sad event that I do this, I want to present this Gold Star flag to you and tell you how much Wyoming Senate and the state of Wyoming appreciate for the sacrifice and the suffering you have gone through. We thank you very much. If you'd like to say a few words, you're welcome.
You don't have to. I just want to thank everybody for supporting this Gold Star plate. It's not just for the 23 fallen heroes from Iraq and Afghanistan, but it's for all of us. All of us who have lost a family member at war and in the service. This has been a baby for the last 2 years, and I can't thank you guys enough.
Thank you, Mrs. Hicks, for spending time with the Wyoming Senate. Our condolences. Next bill for our consideration. Reading clerk, please read it in. It is House Bill 57. Thank you.
House Bill 57, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Damage to Underground Public Utilities, an act relating to underground public utilities. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole Rise report do so with a favorable vote on House Bill 57. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment.
Senator Larson, the Standing Committee Number 1, is that the one you'd wish to read in?
That is correct.
Would the clerk or reader please read it in?
House Bill 57, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 10, line 9.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move further reading of the amendment be dispensed with. And to explain both the amendment and the subsequent amendment, I would like to call on Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 57, members of the Senate, is a culmination of a lot of work during this interim on the one-call system. And I'm sure most of you are aware of what the one-call system does. It's a quasi-government group, if you will, that's put together of people that try to ensure that we minimize the damage to underground utilities. And if you are, in fact, in an area where you think there might be some underground utilities, they have the one-call system, and you call that number, they come out, and they mark those utilities. It's a good idea. I think it first became law in Wyoming in the mid-80s. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, and I will tell you that it went through the collaborative process of all the players in this particular area, that being the owners of the utility, the excavators, the people that actually work for the one-call system, the contractors, everybody. And, Mr. Chairman, what I bring to you is a culmination of that work. I think what I'd like to do is go through the bill and then plug in the standing committee amendment, and then if that goes, and then go forward to the committee of the whole amendment. Mr. Chairman, if you'll look at the bill, and we talk about starting on page one, we have a civil penalty section. And, Mr. Chairman, what's happened out there is that we have some repeat bad offenders. And I, for one, have never been a big fan of higher fines, and you could debate and argue whether the limits of the fines are sufficient, too high, whatever. But we have people that, as I recall the testimony, there have been three or four violations, and they just don't seem to care too much about what they're doing and just do what they will, and not only from the cost standpoint, but from the safety standpoint. So what we did is we had some tougher language on the civil penalties. There was also some concern, if you look at page one, about who could, in fact, initiate a civil action, and we clarified that in the law, who could initiate it. We said it shall go to the district court. I had questions about that, but it seemed like the best place to do it. If you go on to page three, you can see some of the current law we have relative to the Governmental Claims Act, and, of course, they do not apply. They're exempt from all of this. All of the other funds that are collected under this, it will go to the public school fund. You'll see that on page 3, lines 11 through 14. And then we have two areas that we're talking about, one being the operator, one being the excavator. In page 3, we talk about the operator, and we talk about the fines and different issues about the offenses and timing of them. And it's a big one. If you have, if you look at starting on line 13, two or more separate occasions in the 12-month period, you shall be subject to fine up to $75,000. That's a lot of money. And then we get into the liability part of it to try to really clarify, although there hasn't been a lot of discussion, but who's responsible? If the underground facility operator doesn't exercise reasonable care in marking that, then he's liable for damages occurred to it. We go on to the excavator portion, same language. Mr. Chairman, if the excavator doesn't comply with the statutes and does unreasonable things, he is subject to the same penalties and fines. We also get into the section that talks about the liability of the excavator relative to reasonable care. And Mr. Chairman, that's a word that you'll see throughout this, the word reasonable care. That's the level that we decided made sense to, in terms of the exposure and liability that each would have in that. And at this time, I'd like to talk about the repealers real briefly since we're mentioning that. If you look at the back of the bill, page 18, line 18, there are two that are repealed. That's where the existing law talked about the fine structure, talked about the liability, and, of course, we've created this new part of the law that gets into that area, so we don't need those parts of the law. Then we have to go into other parts of existing law, Mr. Chairman. We talk about the definition of emergency. We talk about excavation, what it means. Then we define excavator. Mr. Chairman, we define operator. And I think at this time I'd like to discuss the standing committee amendment number one, and I believe that's been moved. Sir. And, Mr. Chairman, what standing committee amendment number one does on page 10, line 9, there was some concern in the committee that the way that reads, bury, operate, maintain, repair, or replace, you could have a situation where an excavator, not an operator, but an excavator might repair or replace, but under this definition, you could consider them to be an operator. We simply remove the word or and insert the word and. And then if you look at the next place that the amendment comes up is on page 15, line line 4, and we take out proof of negligence. We didn't think that should be in there because of the issue of we're using the word reasonable. And, Mr. Chairman, there's a subsequent amendment that I'll talk about that does that. And if there looks at that because we made it, we have to change that again. But if there are any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them on the standing committee amendment. If not, I would call for the question.
Further discussion on standing committee amendment number one. Seeing none, all in favor of standing committee number one to House Bill 57, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing committee one to 57 has passed. And Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, back on the bill, and then if you look at the rest of page 10 and over to 11, it's cleanup language in terms of renumbering the statutes. We did change and take out telegraphic and said other form of electronic, just to be more current with what goes on in the real world. Another substantive change, Mr. Chairman, occurs online on page 12. And what's happening is some architectural engineering drawings were calling the one call to go out and locate the utilities in an area where they were trying to draw plats. And they were using the one call as a way to help them instead of with doing it in a better, more efficient way, as which they should call the operator. If you've got a subdivision going out in a particular area and you know that there's gas in that area, you ought to call up the local gas distribution center or distributor to have them go out and give you an idea where their lines are located, not use the one call. That was not the intent of the one call. And, Mr. Chairman, on page 13, again, cleanup language, the top of it, we talk about a specific location by legal description. And then on page 14, we get into the operator and existing law. Again, we use the word reasonable care. And, Mr. Chairman, I really think this bill gets to the balance between excavator and operator. You know, if you're the excavator and you do what you're supposed to do and you call the one call and the operator comes out there and clearly marks where that is and you dig 3 feet away and use reasonable care and you hit their utility, then they're responsible. If you do not call the one center and you just show up and dig and you damage the utility, then it is your responsibility. And I think the way this wording and this bill does, I think we really clarify that. If you look on page 16, there's language there to existing law, and it talks about the relationship between the operator and excavator if, in fact, damage does occur to that underground utility and how they shall work together and get it repaired as quickly as possible, and some language about notification within 72 hours. And, Mr. Chairman, that really is the bill. Oh, one other thing, Mr. Chairman. Back on page 18, there's another substantive change. If you look at line 11, we changed the private domestic water and sewer line definition from 5 to 9. And the reason we do that is to be consistent with other parts of our law where, in fact, if you have less than 9, it's really not considered a subdivision in terms of a private domestic water system. And Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad I said that wrong. It could be considered a subdivision, but the existing law uses 9 instead of 5. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Bebout, would you like the committee the whole number 1 read in at this time? Would the reading clerk please read it in?
House Bill 57, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 15, line 4.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 57. Members of the Senate, if you go to page 15, line 4, where I removed in the Standing Committee Amendment proof of negligence, I actually completely removed any liability on the excavator side when I did that. I did that in the committee. That was not the intent. I was trying to get the fact that we would have consistent language. And if you look at the Committee of the Whole Amendment, we say when failing to utilize reasonable care. There, again, we're consistent throughout the new statute we've created and the existing law. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion, Committee of the Whole, number 1 to 57? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just seems like when failing to utilize reasonable care is a lower standard than proof of negligence. Proof of negligence, to me, would rise to a lot higher standard than failing to utilize reasonable care. And so I guess maybe a little discussion about how that standard is viewed about, especially if it has to go into a court of law. I understand proof and negligence. I'm not sure that the reasonable care I totally understand in this case.
Further discussion on the Committee of the Whole. Senator Escobar.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering in regard to the amendment number 1, when failing to utilize reasonable care, I noticed that on page 15, line 16, there's the word exercising reasonable care. And I was just wondering if we didn't want to make those words consistent, or am I reading it wrong?
Further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment 1? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we do not pass this Committee of the Whole amendment, then within that part of the law, by eliminating proof of negligence, we have no level of proof at all. And we're trying to be consistent. And when I looked at the bill, when we talk about the operator, we mentioned reasonable care. We're trying to be consistent here and mention reasonable care. I will try to do further research on that language, but I really think this makes it consistent throughout the bill.
Further discussion, Committee of the Whole Amendment 1. Seeing none, you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion on Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to House Bill 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question. Let me say I'm fully in sympathy with the effort to get the people that are the professionals and to do this sort of thing for a living in compliance. My concerns are with the individual who is doing some things in their own place and is fairly innocent in hitting a line they didn't know was there. The definition of excavator looks to me to cover about everything. Now, there is an exemption for tilling of the soil and for agricultural purposes and for gardening. But with this bill, if a homeowner in a rural subdivision hits an underground utility, say they come in with they're going to plant a tree and they come in with a backhoe or a shovel and dig a hole, gets deep enough to get into some of these things that sometimes aren't very, very deeply, do we really want to stick those people, and I think we are with this bill, with a $5,000 fine on first offense? I'd like a little discussion of that and the extent of which we can do some mischief to just ordinary citizens who perhaps they're careless or not, but they're not pros in this area. They don't regularly dig things up. They're trying to do a little work on their own property, and they get into something.
Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excellent question, and I was trying to look up the statutes, and I didn't get to them quick enough. People that own private property are exempt, and there's other exemptions that are in the statutes, and so this would not affect them in terms of the fine levels. But I will be glad to research that and come back if this bill moves forward in second reading and show you in the statutes where that is. But that's my understanding. We talked about that in committee as well, and that was a testimony we heard.
Further discussion on House Bill 57. Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 57 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Mr. President.
Reports from standing committees. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 128, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Honeycutt, Schiffer, and Scott. Excuse, Senator Hastert and Landon, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 64, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, and Scott. No, Senator Schiffer, Senator Scott, Chairman.
February the 25th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 18, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 20, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Ross, and Sessions, no, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 36, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 80, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 83, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. No, Senators Burns and S. Meyer, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 75, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 91, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 19, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be at recess until 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Senator Geis.
Your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Land, and Resources, will have a joint ag meeting in about 15 minutes or so. I will check up here in S-15 first, and if the House doesn't come over there, then I guess we'll have to go to the House.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number nine, Corporations, will meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock and jointly with the House Committee to discuss interim topics. So,
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number nine, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet 15 minutes after our adjournment in room S-18 to consider the following bills. House Bill 94, Real Property Easements. House Bill 72, Engrossed, Regulation of Wind Energy Facilities. House Bill 106, Engrossed, Small Business Investment Credit. House Bill 97, Nuclear Energy Production Study. House Bill 79, Eminent Domain Wind Power Collector Lines, if time allows. And House Bill 59, Engrossed, Workforce Service Amendments, if time allows. And further, Mr. Chairman, your committee number nine, Minerals, will meet at 8 a.m. on Monday up in the same committee room to consider interim topics in preparation for joint Minerals Committee meeting. And further, Mr. Chairman, your committee number nine, Minerals, will meet in room 302 at noon 15 minutes after the noon recess on Monday to consider joint mineral interim topics in conjunction with the committee from the House. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Appropriations Committee will meet at 1:30 up in the House of Senator Burns up here in Senate 14 to go over the budget differences and the amendments.
Further announcements. You've heard the motion that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. We are in recess.
Thank you.